This week's episode of the FitCast features music by Wolf Parade titled "What Do My Lover Say?" And I know it's been a couple weeks, but we got a fresh new episode of the FitCast for you right now. Hope you enjoy it. And welcome to a new episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 184. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and before we get started on this week's show, got a ton of different segments in here, okay? So the first thing that we're going to go into is the meat and potatoes of this episode. It's the best stuff of the episode, and that is the interview with Brett Contreras. We're going to do that first. Then right after that, it is myself and Jonathan Fast talking about some of the stuff that I saw in Perform Better in Chicago. I'm going to give you a heads up that I was really, really tired, so I did my best to get through it. And then we're going to finish up with an off-topic that we recorded with just me, myself, and Lee Peel. Me, myself, and Lee Peel. That made a lot of sense. John, myself, and Lee Peel. So so that's kind of weird. But we're going to be having those three segments. And again, you know, it's tough. You know, this is a tough couple weeks because had the seminar, got sick, had a wedding. So we had a lot of trouble getting out a podcast, but we do have some great stuff in the pipeline, including Mike Robertson coming up and talking with Martin Rooney about getting him back on to discuss a little bit about what he presented on in Chicago. So it should be some great stuff coming down the road. And again, as always, you know, if you and I know I want to say continue to send in those mailbag questions because we will get to those. I'm hoping that we can actually schedule somewhere where we can all be together this week. But with my schedule, Lee's crazy schedule, and John's interesting schedule, it's hard to sometimes get everyone together. The last thing I want to quickly mention is that we're going to have a new segment. And I'm not going to put it in for this week's show, but I'm going to save it for next week's show. And that's the listener feedback. I remember talking about this a little while ago, but I really want to get listener feedback. And the one way that is going to be easiest to do this is with you guys calling into our voice mailbox or sending in a recorded MP3 to questions at thefitcast.com. So this is your chance to kind of give us feedback and give your own two cents, because I know a lot of you out there, you guys are fitness professionals. You are really into fitness and nutrition. You're the weekend warriors. Whatever it may be, you guys have opinions that are going to count and that are going to help people out as well. So I want you guys to voice those opinions. I really do. So don't be afraid. Call our voicemail line, all right? 775-45-FITCAST or 978-633-3488. And just leave a voicemail. It's like any voicemail box. If you can listen to your message. If you don't like it, just delete it. Record another one. And when you find one, you know, you finish one off that just sounds good and you're happy with it, hit, you know, send, and then we're good to go. So I want you guys to really make use of that and see if we can get a really good segment out of it and get some more, you know, listener feedback, but also some interaction with you guys, because I'm going to have John and Lee listen to these as well and kind of pick out their favorites. We might do like a special pink dumbbell award for that as well. Don't mind my computer restarting in the background. I've been having some computer troubles. So send those in. And the first question that I'm going to ask you guys is, you know, what do you do to make sure you stay on track with your diet, your nutrition, your training? You know, what do you do? Do you have accountability with a friend? Do you have contests? Do you keep a diary? You know, what do you do? So send that in, 775-45-FITCAST or 978-633-3488. Okay, I'm going to stop talking. Now we're going to listen to Brett Contreras, the glute guy, talk. Fantastic interview. Really bright guy, and I think you all really are going to like it a lot. And then again, myself and John will perform better, and then we're going to have an off-topic with everyone. Don't ask me how that happened. It just did. Hope you enjoy it. Right now with Brett Contreras. You may know him as the glute guy. You can check out Brett's stuff right now at brettcontreras.wordpress.com, and someone that I actually finally got to meet in person at the Perform Better Summit in Providence. But you listeners have probably seen his stuff on T Nation, other various websites, his fantastic blog that I just mentioned, which if you haven't bookmarked already, literally extensive content on that blog where, you know, Brett, I must say, it must take you hours upon hours to write some of these blog posts. They are so epically long. So first, I just want to welcome you to the show. And secondly, you know, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you got to be known as, quote, the glue guy? Like, what's up with that?
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Kevin. A little bit about myself. I'm 33 years old, almost 34. I have a master's degree, and I'm a certified strength and conditioning specialist, CSCS. I owned my own fitness studio for a couple years in Gainey Ranch in Scottsdale. And I guess it was kind of while I was there that I developed a lot of my like glute exercises that have become popular and kind of refined my system for getting nice glutes. So after that, I actually let my lease go because I wanted to try and see if I could get popular as a writer in the fitness industry. And I think it was around 9 months ago that I wrote my first article for strengthcoach.com and then for T-Muscle. And then since then, I've written for Elite Fitness or Elite FTS and Wanna Be Big. So probably most people who read a lot of stuff in the fitness industry have probably read some of my articles. Probably the most popular article series was the Inside the Muscle series I wrote for T-Muscle. And I, you know, like you said, I put a lot of effort into my blogs and my articles. I'm known as being a little long-winded, but I'm pretty thorough, and I'm not afraid to go the extra mile. So what kind of separated me from other writers is that I utilize EMG, experiments and research to lend credibility to some of my methods. So that's a little bit about me. As for how I became known as the glute guy, this is kind of a funny story because I look back now and laugh. I mean, it's only been around a year, but last year I went to the Perform Better 3-day functional training summit in Long Beach, which is actually coming up in a few weeks. But anyway, I had done a bunch of EMG research actually before I closed up my studio and wrote my glute ebook. I had done a bunch of probably 2 months of EMG experiments in my garage on the glutes, the quads, the hamstrings, and some of the other muscles, but basically with a main focus on glute exercises. So I wanted to see, you know, what exercises do give you the most glute, you know, mean and peak glute activity. And so I did all like 2 months of experiments in my old studio, and it's kind of funny. I would lock up my studio at night, and I'd have to hook up these electrodes to me, and you know, hooking up electrodes to the glutes, it's not easy. You have to kind of work out in your underwear. So I remember thinking to myself, I mean, it would be like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd still be at my studio doing experiments by myself. And I was thinking, you know, I hope this pays off one day, because I don't think there's any other trainer in the world right now in his skivvies hooked up to electrodes, you know, measuring the EMG activity of these different exercises. But it all paid off because I wrote a basic article and went to Long Beach, and I kind of like I'd go to all my favorite speakers, and after hearing them speak, I would kind of go up and introduce myself and hand them an article, which I kind of think is funny because that's how I met Mike Boyle and, you know, like Martin Rooney and different people. And they were probably thinking, who is this crazy guy, you know, handing me this article talking about glute activity. But I actually hit it off with Martin Rooney, and we had this awesome, like, hour-long conversation, which is kind of the funny thing about Martin. He makes you think you're his best friend. So I'm sure everyone is, you know, who meets Martin is like, yeah, we really get along. But, you know, Martin gets along with everyone. But I had this great talk with him. And then he's like, you know, you should call yourself something. You should have a name like the glute guy or something like that. So I thought, you know, that makes sense, so I ran with it. But, you know, I don't really want to get pigeonholed as just a guy who only knows about the glutes. I actually know a lot, you know, I've been reading and training for a lot of years. So I think people are starting to realize that I'm not, you know, unidimensional. But anyway, that's how I got known as the glute guy.
Well, let's talk a little bit about strength and conditioning as well. And, you know, I don't, like you said, I don't want people to pigeonhole you as the glute guy. I mean, you do a lot of stuff on strengthcoach.com as well. And I guess my question is, if you had to say where your passion lies, where is it, in the physique side of things or strength conditioning like athletes?
Yeah, I'm torn right now because, you know, I have right now I have probably, I don't know, once upon a time, I think, you know, I bought all my equipment for around $30,000 worth of equipment. And I used to teach high school math for 6 years in the Scottsdale School District. So while I was a math teacher, I saved up a bunch of money and I bought all this equipment. Well, now that equipment is in my garage and I'm just kind of waiting to open up another facility and wait for the right opportunity, you know, to maybe partner up with the right people or, you know, I was considering moving somewhere, you know, because I don't quite feel like Arizona is a good state right now for personal trainers. But I'm trying to determine, you know, what should my focus be. And I feel like, you know, this is going to sound conceited, but I think I'm the best trainer in the world for giving people nice glutes. I mean, my methods are amazing. I've done more glute research than any person in the world. And I learn from the best and, you know, kind of steal or incorporate their methods too. So, you know, I've been to like 5 different seminars this year. So I want to know what all the other top people are doing too. So as far as physique enhancement goes, especially for women, I feel like I'm the go-to guy, but I'm very interested in sports too. And that's kind of what I like about being called the glute guy is that it's pretty versatile because, you know, the glutes, you know, the glute maximus, its 3 primary roles would be, you know, hip extension, hip abduction, and hip external rotation. So that's any sprinting, jumping, cutting from side to side, and, you know, rotational sports. So if you're the glute guy, you're pretty wide open as far as athletic training, physique enhancement training, you know, training for strength. So I would say that my number one interest would be like speed training and how, you know, the different exercises and how they apply or how they transfer over to sprinting and speed training. That would probably be my number one interest right now.
And that's a great point. When we have especially new younger athletes that come into Boyles, one of the first things we need to emphasize is glute activation because it plays so many vital roles in not only speed, but, you know, being able to, you know, prevent injuries, especially when it comes to women in their knees. Like it's obviously, Jack, I don't need to explain this to you, Brett, but I mean, for people out there, you know, it's not just for looks, although, you know, when you can wear those spandex shorts into the gym and be able to, you know, earn that right, that's also good as well. So Brett, I've watched a ton of your videos and stuff like that, and your clientele seems to be, for the majority, it is women. Is that correct?
Yep. Kind of funny. When I decided to quit teaching, I said to myself, okay, I was a really, really popular teacher just because I was young and kind of, I guess you'd say I'm a cool guy. And so I had all these students that, you know, I remember the counselor at one of the schools saying, Brett, you're the only teacher with a waiting list. There's no other teacher that has a waiting list, and your waiting list to be your student is like 2 pages long. So all the students wanted to be, you know, they all wanted to have me as a teacher. So I was a popular teacher. So I thought, God, this would be, you know, a jackpot to just train high school athletes, open up a facility and start training them, you know, like train the local football teams, the high school football teams, kind of like what, you know, like Joe DeFranco does. But in between opening up a studio, I had just quit teaching and I started training just like friends and family members. And a lot of them were females. And, you know, the women would say, I love this type of training. Cause I mean, I guess you'd say, I don't have a lot of, you know, machines. It's all, you know, I have an awesome power rack with a adjustable step-up platform. I've got a 45-degree hyper, a back extension glute ham raise. I have a reverse hyper. I have my scorcher that I think is awesome. But it's a lot of different glute pieces of equipment. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of machines. Most of the training I did at the time was athletic-based. But these women loved it. And you know, the other caveat was that I only had like 800 pounds of weight at the time. And I thought to myself, if I train two strong guys, you know, who are deadlifting 400 or 500 pounds, that's it. I can train two people at once. But if I train women and I have 800 pounds, for the most part, I could train, you know, like eight girls at a time. So I started training a lot of women. And then when I opened up my studio lifts, it was just, it kind of got labeled as a female only place. All the girls would tell their friends. And I think the most clients I ever had was 55 clients at one time. And probably 45 of them were women. So I did group training. So I have a lot of experience training women, and I kind of know what they want and how to get their bodies, you know, good. So yeah, definitely like training males. It's fun training really strong guys and athletic people, but I'm probably, you know, most comfortable training women. So you're correct about that.
Let's talk a little bit about single leg training, because that's something that for people that listen to the podcast know, if you're on strengthcoach.com, you follow Mike Boyle's stuff, you go to these seminars, you know that is a big, not necessarily controversial topic, but it's something that a lot of people are talking about. Kind of, what's your take on single leg training or unilateral versus bilateral training? And the studies that you did, you know, did you find that one was better than another for glute activation? And I guess the final part of that question is, do you still use a combination of both, or do you kind of lean towards one side, whether it be, you know, your female or just your personal training clients, opposed to athletes?
Okay, very interesting question. So when I part of the reason I did such extensive glute experience, you know, EMG experience, is because I'm super curious. You know, I want to know the answers to all these things too. So I've always noticed, and you might be the same way, Kevin, like if I do, say I did four sets of heavy walking barbell lunges, the next day my glutes would be crippled. You know, I would be so sore in my glutes. So for that reason, I always, since I work legs twice a week, I don't do four sets of walking lunges. I try and manage my soreness. I'll only do maybe two hard sets. So I've always noticed kind of single leg exercises get you more sore. And so I wondered if they led to more glute activity. You know, as you know, you feel the glutes working when you do squats, deadlifts, different things, but you don't get as sore, at least from, you know, there are some people who say, oh, I get really sore glutes from squatting and deadlifting. But for the most part, if you say what exercise gets you your glutes the sorest, they would say something like a walking lunge, or, you know, like a single leg squat pattern. So I was very surprised when I found that it does not lead to more glute activity. So clearly something is going on physiologically that's inducing that soreness. So that's a scenario where, you know, EMG activation is important, but it's not everything. It's important to understand, you know, why would a lunge get your glutes so sore? Well, when you do a lunge, your glute is being stretched at the bottom, and the hardest part of the lunge would be down deep, where you reverse the eccentric to the concentric phase. And during that stretch where there's the most tension, that's gonna induce the most muscular damage, and especially that eccentric reversal. So that's gonna cause the most damage, which will create the most delayed onset muscle soreness. So lunges and squats are a great glute exercise for that purpose. And I have studies that show that, you know, muscular damage leads to muscular growth. So for a hypertrophy standpoint, you would want to do lunges and different exercises like lunges, because they're going to get you in that deep, you know, the glutes in a deep stretch position, and they're going to help lead to muscular growth. But it's also important, and I know this is straying off the topic, you can do exercises like barbell glute bridges and barbell hip thrusts, and they don't, well, once you're accustomed to them, like once you get over the initial soreness from learning a new exercise, they don't really get you sore, but they do get your glutes pumped up, and you feel them, like you could be walking around like a duck during your workout because your glutes are so pumped. So I have other studies that show that there's, you know, a lot of hypertrophy is associated with the pump, and different growth factors and cytokines and hormones are released into locally when you do have a pump. So if you're going for hypertrophy, you really want to use a blend of different exercises. And then if you've read any of my writing, I always talk about load vectors and hitting the glutes from different directions. Like, and this is why I always say a lift like a squat or a lunge is axial. You're lifting weight upwards. But if you do like a hip thrust or a glute bridge, you're pushing the weight forward. And people think, big deal, that doesn't mean anything. That's not a big deal. You know, the hip thrust is just a glute activation exercise, and this guy's gone too far with it, loading 405 pounds on his waist. But I don't think of it that way. I think of it as it's a sprint-specific exercise. And a lot of the guys, like I have books from Verko Shansky, you know, Mel Siff, Zatsiorsky, Tudor Bompa, and, you know, all these guys we're talking about, you know, like using exercise that hit the right load vector. Like in a sprint, if you want to train the hip flexors in a stretched position, you would want to kind of lay down on a bench and have a leg draped downwards and have like a kettlebell hanging from your foot. So you work the hip flexor in a stretched position to help reverse the leg when you're sprinting. Well, you know, they were thinking about stuff like that back then, and they even have examples of hip thrust movements in their books. But a lot of the current scientists and coaches aren't thinking about this stuff. So, you know, people will say, oh, it's not specific to sprinting because you're not standing. But that's not true. It is specific to sprinting. Just like a bench press can transfer over to shot put, even though you're not standing, you're laying down a bench. You're just in a bench press, you're developing shoulder power, which you then transfer into your shot putting. You develop the glute power in that specific load vector, in the anteroposterior load vector, and then you transfer that into sprinting. So for both sports purposes and hypertrophy purposes, I like to hit the glutes from a variety of angles and different directions. And to answer your question about how single leg training applies, I like to do, you know, mix in, you always mix in some single leg and double, you know, bilateral movement. So one day we're either doing a bilateral squatting motion or a unilateral squatting motion, you know, or a bilateral deadlift or a unilateral deadlift or a bilateral hip thrust or a unilateral. You just mix it up and there's plenty of room for variety. So, of course, I love the different variety you get with the different types of bilateral and unilateral movements, especially when you consider all the different directions and angles. You get a lot of variety, which is important too because clients want variety. So I kind of use it all.
For people out there who haven't tried the barbell hip lifts, yeah, truly something that you need to check out. And I saw that, and I think it was in one of your strengthcoach.com articles where I saw it, and you had a video of it. And the first thing I said to myself is that looks really uncomfortable. But it's actually not too bad if you have like an Eric's pad or something, I guess you could do, you know, fold up like a yoga mat, something like that to use, to, you know, to kind of ease the pressure from the barbell. But, it is something that everyone should try out, and it's something that you can adapt easily for, I mean, to be honest, I've used it a lot with, my female clients, even if I have to start them, with something like a body bar, which you can load up to, you know, they can be up to like 20, 25 pounds, and then getting them to a 45 pound barbell. It's something that's surprised me. I would say I was a skeptic before I tried it, but I definitely became a believer once I tried it out.
Well, I for that, I use a Hampton thick bar pad. And it's funny because I think from the get-go, I always told people, do yourself a favor if you're ever going to do this movement and buy a Hampton thick bar pad. I bought mine from a local fitness store. I think it was, you know, 25 or 30 bucks, but you can order them online. I could not imagine, like I saw a YouTube video of Kevin Nee, strongman, using 600 pounds, and they don't use any pad at all, I'm going, I cannot even imagine how bad that would hurt. I would even be worried about, you know, doing damage to different, you know, structures across your pelvis and the hip flexors and stuff like that. But if you have a Hampton Thick bar pad, it transforms an excruciatingly painful exercise to a pain-free movement. You won't feel a thing. And so I always tell people, get this Hampton Thick bar pad. Just, you know, spend the $30. You can also use it for other things. But I have never done barbell glute bridges or barbell hip thrusts without it. And I couldn't imagine how, you know, if I didn't have it, I probably wouldn't do them because it would hurt so bad. So that's what I use. But I've had people, you know, email me and say, oh, I use a sandbag. I use someone converted their foam roller somehow into, you know, letting them do the, you know, use it as a cushion. And then someone used, I can't remember what they were, some type of foam they used. So people can get, you know, people get creative and innovative with different things. But yeah, you need some cushion there. But the other thing is people will say, well, why would you load up a glute bridge? Why would you load up a hip thrust? It's a glute activation move. And that's just stupid. That's like me saying, why would you load up a push-up? It's a pec activation move. Like, there's no, it's not a glute activation move. It's a glute strengthening move that gets your glutes very strong from that direction in that range of motion. And what I like about the glute bridges and the hip thrusts is that you have maximum tension on the glutes at the top of the movement where your hips are in neutral. And that's a range that doesn't get hit with squats. You know, squats are easy up top. If you're standing with a, in a squat, it's easy. The top portion of the movement, you know, is really easy in a squat. And that's where the squats are hard in a hips flex position for the glutes. Hip thrusts are the hardest in a hips, you know, extended position for the glutes. So the two kind of balance each other out in that respect.
We have a boatload of questions from the listeners, so let's try to attack some of those as we go on. The first one that we have is from Lisa. She says, I'm 42-year-old fit athletic woman. I strength train 3 times per week. I do high intensity interval training 2 times per week. And she says, I need to monitor how big my quads/glutes get when I train. I add muscle easily and was wondering if I should use only body weight or lower weight to deter them from growing bigger. I like them a bit smaller. I should mention that I do cardio after strength training plus one other day of intervals. That's 1 day of interval cardio for an hour, but not high intensity interval training. Side note, my hamstrings are unattractive and weak. Do you have any tips? And again, that's from Lisa. What do you think, Brett?
Okay, so it sounds like Lisa's goals are physique related. So if her goals were performance related, I would have different recommendations. But since it sounds like she, you know, her concerns are physique based, then some of the, you know, some of the questions that I have are, you know, are you sure your quads and glutes are too big, or do you just need to lose fat off that area? Because some girls confuse the two. They, you know, but this girl sounds like, or this lady, I should say, she's 42. She sounds like she knows what she's talking about. So I give her the benefit of the doubt. And there are, in fact, because I've seen the arguments where people say, you know, girls can't get too muscular. That's stupid. You know, girls never get too big. It does happen. It's happened with a couple of the girls I've trained, especially if you're a really good strength coach and good at getting girls really strong. You know, a girl might not have too big of quads when she's learning to squat with her body weight and doing body weight lunges and squatting with the barbell. But when you start getting them up to where they're deep squatting 135 to 185, sometimes I would say with like maybe one in six girls or something like that might start getting too big of quads. And this girl says she has, her glutes are getting too big too. So my comment to this lady would be, stop doing strength work for your quads and glutes. I always battle women with physique related issues because I'll tell them, you know, they don't really they can describe what they want, but then they don't understand how to get there. Because they think, you know, for example, abs, they'll say, oh, I need to do abs all day long. And I'll say, well, spot reduction is, there's not much evidence that it works. So, you know, you shouldn't focus on doing a half an hour of abs. You'll get nice abs from just, you know, doing strength training and interval training and stuff like that. And it's really hard for them to believe you because they want to work their abs. Well, they feel like they always have to be doing strength work for their quads and glutes, but it's hard getting them there, getting them, you know, getting muscular quads and glutes is hard, but maintaining them is easy, especially since she's sprinting. So I would say stop doing strength work for your quads and glutes. You're getting a lot of activation from your sprints. You know, a lot of sprinters have great glutes from sprints. So the other comment I have is that, you know, she talks about just using body weight or lower weights, and I'm assuming that she would do higher repetition ranges. And that's another thing I'd like to address. A lot of times, you know, I think the best rep range is very specific to the individual, but most bodybuilders will swear to you that higher rep ranges, especially for the lower body, lead to more hypertrophy. In fact, most bodybuilders, for their upper body work, they'll stay in the 6 to 12 rep range, but then for the lower body, it's 10 to 20. And even for, you know, certain movements like leg press, they'll go up to 50 reps and like leg extensions. So they're pumping blood into that area. They're doing higher reps. So she might, by using just body weight, she might discover that it leads to bigger muscles than if she went heavy, if she's still going hard at them. So I would just want to caution her about that. And then kind of the last question, she said that her hamstrings are unattractive and weak. Well, if you want more hamstring hypertrophy, then you've got to get them a lot stronger. It's for some people, it's really hard to get muscular hamstrings. They might develop their quads easily, but their hamstrings just want to stay put. So if you want hypertrophy in the hamstrings, you've got to get really strong hamstrings. The problem with this lady is that she says her glutes get too big. So if she does a lot of hip extension moves and trains her hamstrings through hip extension, her glutes might, you know, grow out of control. So to me, it makes sense that this lady would want to do more knee flexion work, which would take the glutes out of it to some extent. So as you know, the hamstrings do both hip extension and knee flexion. So she would want to do mostly knee flexion stuff. And it's funny because just coincidentally, I think it was yesterday, the day before, I saw a video on one of my colleagues' blogs that showed a female Olympic bobsledder. Her name is Emily Azevedo. And she was doing Russian leans, which I call them Russian leg curls. They're also called natural glute ham raises, but just the exercise where you're kind of kneeling on the ground and a partner's holding your feet. But she did four of them with you know, really good form and going through a full range of motion without leaning her torso too much. She had great hamstrings and they were very, very strong. I think people underestimate how, you know, if you want muscular hamstrings, they've got to be very, very strong. So what I would recommend to her is focus on doing knee flexion, like exercise like Russian leans and glute ham raises and even lying leg curls or, you know, seated leg curls so she doesn't interfere with getting her glutes too big. So that, I mean, a lot of coaches have a problem separating, you know, like kind of like abandoning their philosophy when a person has physique related goals. But if you're training people who just are concerned about their physique, you kind of have to take a step back and abandon your ideals and just say, well, she doesn't want her glutes to grow. She wants her hamstrings to grow. So that, you know, you've got to be able to adapt.
Sorry for the pause. My microphone takes a second to unmute itself. People don't want to hear my chair squeaking while the interview goes on. Let's go to the next question that we have, and it looks like it's coming from Kyle. It says, Brett, I'm a physical therapy student at the Medical College of Virginia and had a question regarding glute activation / function. How do you like to test glute function and teach glute activation / proper hip extension? As I finish my outpatient orthopedic rotation, I have tried to squeeze current strength training methods into patients' programs when they need more hip extension with a neutral spine. I tried to do soft tissue work to hip flexors, then dynamically move into a lunge hip flexor stretch and finish with a supine bridge for activation. Often patients have difficulty with feeling their glutes fire. It's clear substitution occurs up and down the chain due to weak hip extension. But do you have any great ways to allow the patient or client to get the feeling of powerful glute contraction and proper hip extension as the strengthened physical therapy fields continue a growing relationship? I really enjoy the opinions of great strength coaches. Thanks for your thoughts. So, Brett, what do you think? That's a great question from Kyle.
Yeah, this is a great question. And I'm glad that Kyle is kind of realizing, like, the strength coaches have realized we can learn a lot from physical therapists, and the good ones, the good physical therapists, realize that they can learn a lot from the strength coaches. So there's definitely a symbiotic relationship there. So first thing I want to talk about is most physical therapists use the prone hip extension test, where you're kind of laying prone, like with on your stomach, and then you extend one leg and you observe and you palpate. And here's the problem with the prone hip extension test. So you look at one study and it shows that kind of the lumbar erectors and the hamstrings contract together, and then the glute max contracts a little bit later. It's delayed. Then you look at another study, like one by Vault and Banzer in 1997, show that it's the ipsilateral lumbar erector, which is the opposite lumbar erector, followed by the hamstring, followed by the contralateral or same side lumbar erector, and then the glute max. So that indicates that the glute max is delayed. Then another study by Joel and Janda, Vladimir Janda, in 1987, showed that it went hammies, then glutes, then erectors. And you look at another study by Chaitow and Delaney. Actually, that was in a book, not a study. But they say it should go glute max first, then hamstrings, then contralateral erector, then ipsilateral erector. So a final study that I found by Lehman and colleagues in 2004, they took a hard look at this. And they said, is there a consistent pattern? So they used 10 males and 4 females. And they studied the firing patterns. And they showed that there's no consistent, firing pattern between individuals. But they did show that there's always a delay in glute max activation. It's usually 370 milliseconds after the first contraction. And this was confirmed in a more recent study in 2009. So the problem with physical therapists is a lot of them think that, you can feel the firing patterns if you palpate, and you can't. Some of the firing rate differences are 30 milliseconds. You can't, that's not accurate. You're not going to be able to detect that. So that's all useless in my opinion. However, like Vladimir Janda, he would say, don't palpate, because number one, it interferes with the pattern, but just look at the motion. You observe and kind of look, are they moving at the hips or, the lumbar spine, or are they tilting the pelvis? Because that's called false hip extension, where people have weak glutes. They're going to move at their, low back and pelvis and not their hips. So that's kind of the main thing. If they have strong glutes, they will perform the movement via hip extension. If they don't have strong glutes, they'll use their hamstrings and their spinal erectors. And, you'll see some knee flexion. You'll see anterior pelvic tilt. You'll see lumbar extension. So I don't know. I don't like that test that much. I don't even like the whole prone hip extension test that much. I kind of look at it like a strength coach, and I start the people out and I palpate. I look at their glute hypertrophy or atrophy. Some people, you can feel their glutes and they barely have any glute muscle. And of course, why would their glutes activate much? It's a tiny little, they might have, it sounds rude, but they might have a fat butt, but when you actually palpate in there, there's no muscle in there. So I look at it like, usually I have a client and I'm going to get to train them for at least a month. So I look at it like a month long process, where at first they have weak glutes and they can't activate them at all. And as you work with them over the course of a month or 2 months or 3 months, they're going to greatly improve upon their glute activation ability. So you use cues, like a new study by Lewis and Shirley Sarman showed that cues first of all, they can decrease the delayed onset of the glutes, so they cause the glutes to fire quicker, and they cause the glutes to fire harder. You get more glute activation. So use cues. Tell them, you know, use the glutes, squeeze the butt cheeks, whatever your cues are. But, you know, always tell these clients, you know, remind them, you know, if they're doing squats, sit back, you know, keep the chest up, keep the knees out. You use cues to and it's exercise specific. So I look at it like every single exercise has a different, like, strategy with glute activation. So whether you're doing squats, deadlifts, you know, lunges, hip thrusts, back extensions, all these different exercises, you're trying to get these people to use their glutes. And that's kind of where the physical therapist can learn from the strength coach is we know how to get people strong glutes. And, you know, it's like, you know, it takes time. You got to get them firing their glutes when they squat, get them firing their glutes when they do deadlifts, get them using their glutes when they do bridging work. One exercise that no one ever talks about it in the strength coaching industry, because it's kind of, you know, been labeled a bad exercise, is the back extension. But that's one of my best glute activating exercises. I have them, and they have to have good hamstring flexibility, but I have them kind of lean over, you know, and relax their torso and lean over the pad. And then I say, raise your torso with your glutes and just kind of keep your, I don't want to see any lumbar movement. And I show them what that looks like. And I say, I want to see all hip movement. I want to see your glutes causing your torso to rise up. And when they do a correct back extension, they're always amazed. They're going, oh my God, this is a great glute exercise. I totally feel my butt burning. But you have to do it the right way. So, I mean, basically, to answer this, to sum this question up, you know, practice makes perfect. How long did it take? I mean, how long did it take you to get strong activating glutes? It took me a couple years, I think, because I didn't know what I was doing. But it usually takes my clients a couple months. And then after a couple months, they're going, oh my God, I feel my glutes with everything I do. Even when I stand up from a chair, I feel my glutes activate. So, you know, it takes time and learn the different, you know, strategies for each exercise, because you can't just expect people to get strong glutes from doing glute activation work. You also have to get them doing, you know, using their glutes with functional movements like squatting type movements. And we've all seen the Catarazano study in 2002, where he showed that the deeper you squat, the more glutes you're going to work. And then there was a study in 2009 by Paoli that showed that the wider that you squat, the more your glutes you're going to work. But you have to teach the people how to sit back. You have to teach them the right form. So learn the right form with the different exercises. Take your time. You know, the very first session, people don't always have perfect mechanics. Their lumbar spine is trying to move because they're trying to use their erector spinae. And look at it like a, you know, a month-long process or a two-month-long process where you're taking them from A to Z, you know, one step at a time. And at the end of the two-month period, they're going to have strong, easily activating glutes.
Let's go to the last question that we have that addresses warm-ups. It's from Neil, who lives in New Jersey. It says, I incorporated glute activation exercise in my dynamic warm-up about a year or so ago. This, coupled with complete hip extension, which I wasn't doing before, has led to stronger and bigger glutes. However, now I find a lot of the exercise I used in my dynamic warm-up not as challenging. As a result, my glutes do not feel like they're contracting as hard as they were before when finishing up reps of exercises like deadlifts or front squats. Do you have any recommendations? Previously, I was doing bird dogs, donkey kicks, glute marches, fire hydrants, clams, forward and lateral leg swings, glute bridges, and single leg glute bridges.
So, I mean, basically this guy, I reached this point, and that's why I thought of my different glute exercises, because you reach a point where a glute bridge is so easy. Are you really getting anything out of it? I think I could do 100 glute bridges like it was nothing. So, and some people would say that's not the point. You're trying to kind of use low loading to kind of squeeze the, you know, isometrically squeeze the glutes as hard as possible. But we don't do that for other muscles. Eventually, you want to make it, you know, a challenging exercise. So that's why I think this guy just needs to, you know, make them harder. Increase the range of motion, add resistance. So, you know, the exercise he named, bird dogs, donkey kicks, glute marches, fire hydrants, clams, You know, even single leg glute bridges, those are easy. Over time, those get really easy. So I think this guy would benefit from kind of progressing to different, you know, more challenging exercise. If I do an abduction movement, now since I have super strong glutes, I don't do side-lying abductions. I put a band around a pole and I do band standing hip abductions. I do seated band hip abductions. I use a band to make it really hard, or you can use a cable column. I do barbell glute bridges. I do barbell hip thrusts. And, you know, if I do like a donkey kick movement, I get underneath the reverse hyper and use that pendulum to add, you know, add loading to that exercise. So, this guy, he needs to do hard, more difficult, challenging glute activation exercises. He certainly started off properly. You want to start at the easier variations, but you want to progress to the harder ones. But then the other thing that he needs to kind of keep in mind is that just because you have, you know, your glutes are activating doesn't mean you can ever just forget about the glutes when you're doing squats, deadlifts. Every set you do, you have to remind yourself to use your glutes. You know, Martin Rooney and I were talking about this years ago. I have like four studies that, or I think I have like six studies that show that the glutes don't want to activate. When you stand up from a chair, or when you're walking, the glutes, you know, they're usually a big muscle group. They don't want to activate. They, metabolically speaking, it's a costly endeavor. So they're trying to spare energy. So they want to use, you know, the hamstrings or something else that, you know, they have more elastic efficiency and are just smaller muscles to activate. So you have to kind of rewire your brain, rewire your motor patterns to get the glutes activating. So anytime you kind of have bad form on an exercise, a lot of times it makes sense. You're like, oh, I wasn't activating my, you know, I wasn't focusing on my glutes. So every set you do of front squats, deadlifts, all those different exercises, you kind of have to remind yourself to use your glutes.
Going to be kind of a weird question, but we got a lot of people that sent something in similar to this. You know, since you're the glute guy, are there any, you know, there's lots of women in Hollywood. Who do you think's doing a good job? I think that's the best, most politically correct way I can put it.
Which actresses or which stars have the nicest butts?
Yeah, I guess that's the way they wanted to put it. Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
I mean, do you even look at that stuff? Like, you know, you'd be like, you know, damn, they should probably be doing some more, you know.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with it. I have my whole family. Even my 13-year-old niece looks at people's glutes because I look at them. And I feel like I'm you know, like the Michelangelo of glutes, and I know how to sculpt it perfectly. I just know what they need to do. And for some girls, they wouldn't need to do much glute work. Like, I mean, think about like, you know, Vita Guerra or someone like Kim Kardashian, who already kind of has a lot of glute mass. They need to just whittle down the fat. I'm not complaining about their butts. I like that kind of bigger, juicy booty. But, you know, for them, they kind of have the mass easily. So they just need to focus on doing a lot of high intensity work. And yeah, you can throw in glute strengthening exercises, but you're not necessarily concerned about progressive overload with them. You're just kind of trying to burn fat and get it whittled down, and it's going to look unbelievable. They already do look great even when they're bigger. If they lean out, they look like a perfect 10. So there's those type of girls, and then there's the girls like, you know, some of the skinnier models, like maybe like Gwyneth Paltrow, and even like Scarlett Johansson. I've seen pictures of her where, you know, she's beautiful, one of the most beautiful women in the world, but I've seen pictures of her where she looks like she could use some more glute. Not recently, I saw her at the Spike MTV, or not MTV, but the Spike, I don't know what it was, some movie awards, and she looked like she had a great butt, so maybe she's been working on it, or maybe she was just wearing something underneath her dress, you never really know. Because I think like Beyonce was caught once wearing like butt cushioning pads or something.
Serious?
But yeah, a picture of it. But you kind of look at the glutes and you say, okay, what do those glutes need to look ideal? And I will say this: I like my women to look sexy. I don't like the 3% body fat. I don't want to see veins running down their lower abs, you know? Or so I don't need a woman to be 5% body fat. I think women look sexiest when they're kind of, you know, in between 15 to 25% body fat. So there's a lot of leeway there, but they need to have nicely shaped glutes. You can go to the airport or anything and walk and watch the people walking by. You can count 100 people and not one will have what you would consider amazing glutes or an amazing butt. So if you are like, if you're a woman and you have an amazing butt, that separates you from the pack. That separates you from the rest. And most of the time, girls need more glute mass. They'll say, "Oh, I need to get my butt smaller." But that's because their butts are wide. They need to lose fat. But when you take all the fat off, they wouldn't have much depth. They wouldn't have much pop or much, you know, shape to their glutes. They need more shape. How do you get more shape? You need strong glutes. So that's kind of the main thing that I do is those type of girls, they just can't get strong without me. I don't know what it is, but I, you know, good strength coaches just have a knack for getting people stronger. And the girls who train with me, you know, for 6 months, they greatly, you know, and I get them, I have them squatting, I have them deadlifting, I have them lunging, but I also am huge on the barbell glute bridges and barbell hip thrust. And then I also like the single leg hip thrust and the pendulum quadruped donkey kick. Those are kind of my, and back extensions as well, and different, you know, there's a lot of different movements I use, but they get strong at everything. They might be doing, you know, barbell glute bridges with 185 pounds for 20 reps. They might be doing, you know, barbell hip thrust with 135 pounds for 30 reps. It's crazy. All you got to do is write down what they did and then try and beat it the next workout. And for girls who have never kind of utilized a progressive overload scheme, their first, you know, few months of training, they will beat the record every time. So all you got to do is say to them, okay, you know, say the client's name is Julie. Okay, Julie, you got, last time you did this exercise, you did, you know, 45 pounds for 12 reps. Let's go for 15. They're not stupid. They want to beat it. So they'll get 15. Then the next workout, you say, okay, last time you got 15 reps with the bar. So this time we're going to go with 65 pounds. I suspect that you're going to get around 8 to 10. And they'll do it. And then the next workout, you say, okay, you know, I'm not saying just do one set. You can do multiple sets. I'm just saying make sure they're getting stronger over time. And that increased strength, especially in like a higher rep range, is what adds the glute mass. So you have to be objective. You have to be willing to say, okay, do my glutes need extra mass? But to answer your question, I really like, it's funny. A lot of the girls who I think have the nicest butts, I don't even think do anything really for their glutes. Girls like Jessica Alba, you know, Jessica Biel, and these girls who, I know Jessica Biel works out a lot, but I remember reading an article with her trainer that says, we just do, you know, sprinting and kind of like med ball work because she'll her legs and everything will grow too big if she does too much strength work. So it all depends on the physique of the person you're training. They're all going to receive a different program, but I would say most girls need the extra glute mass.
Very good. Before we wrap up, Brett, you know, where can people, again, check out your stuff? You know, where can they pick up the ebook? Where would be the best place to get some more information on you?
My blog is, as you mentioned in the beginning of the interview, it's www.brettcontreras.wordpress.com. I sell an ebook at theglutguy.com. And in my blog, I have a tab that has all my articles and links to different interviews and articles I've written. So that's a good place to go. And I've written a ton of different blogs on different topics, but I've done some really good YouTube videos on glute training as well. And you can go to my blog and there's a tab that on glute training, and if you just want to learn about that. So that would be the best place to go is my blog.
Very good. Well, Brett, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Some very enlightening stuff, and also nice to get a look inside your head as a glute guy. And I always thought that just strength coaches were crazy looking at asymmetries as people walk down the street. But you know, looking at butts and what people can do to make them better is, I think, one notch above. at least.
Of course. If we all joined forces, we could get this world a much better place, you know? So I, and you know, when you give, like, for example, when you give a girl a nice butt, I used to have guys coming into my facility and they'd show up, they'd kind of open the door and I'd be like, hello? And they'd be like, are you Brett Contreras? Yep. I just want to shake your hand. I don't know what you're doing with my wife or my girlfriend, but I just want to shake your hand and say, keep doing what you're doing. And these girls would tell me, you know, because like most girls who are in a relationship, all they really want is their boyfriend to be more into them. They're kind of, a lot are naturally insecure and they just want their guy to be all over them and totally into them. And that's the, when you get sad, we're, men are pretty shallow. And we, you know, if your girlfriend's butt goes from a 6 to a 10, all of a sudden you become a much better boyfriend. It's sad, but you know, you become all over them. And that's what I felt like, you know, when I had my studio, I was turning out nice butts left and right. And I really felt like I was doing a nice thing, you know, for people. So it's kind of like if we all, you know, the strength coaches kind of need to back away and say, all right, we need to abandon our ideals and do some more higher repetition, more focused glute work. And then the personal trainers need to learn from the strength coaches and say, you know, I got to use good form. I got to teach their glutes how to activate in the first place. So you kind of need a blended approach when you train for physique purposes. So anyway, thanks a lot, Kevin. I really, really appreciate you interviewing me on FitCast. I'm a big fan of the show and I've been listening to it for a while. And I really, really like, you know, I love FitCast. I love you and John and Lee. You guys are great. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
And also, one last thing. I gave Brett a spike at Perform Better, and as I gave him one, I think I passed the torch because I have not had one in about a week and a half, almost 8 days. So, Brett, how's that going?
Oh, I'm a huge fan. I love spike. I suspected I'd like it because I'd seen you wrote about it and Tony Jundercore has written about it, so I had a feeling I'd like it, but yeah, huge spike fan now.
Oh, God. We created a new monster. All right. Thanks, everyone, for checking out the show this week. Please don't forget to check out Brett's site. If you forget the link or you just are listening to the podcast on the website, we'll have a link for it right in the show notes. And until next time, again, thanks for everyone. Don't forget to check out the podcast on iTunes. And we'll see you next week. Go do some barbell glute bridges. Let us know how they go. Kind of going into the seminar, we'll talk about that a little bit. And I think I remember talking a little bit about Martin Rooney. Obviously, we had him on the show a couple weeks ago, John. Did you listen mm-hmm. to the interview?
Nope. I want to, though. It's on my list of things to do, to be honest.
It's really good. It was.
Oh,
it was
I don't
really
doubt
good.
It. I don't doubt it.
But Martin, basically, what we went through with his seminar was, and I'll give you the exact title, it was The Art of Exceptional Training, and mm-hmm. it went in went through everything from, you know, coaching to, you know, having to live up to the standards that you expect from your clients, and you know, all this other stuff. And it was kind of, I want to say, it was he gets really pumped up and jazzed up mm-hmm. about stuff, and it does become pretty motivational. And
yeah, he's a great presenter. I saw him I guess like 2 years ago at the Chicago Perform Better. He was really good.
Yeah, he had a lot of great things to say, you know, like just kind of how your energy affects. I mean, unfortunately in this industry, this is our job. So when we, the way we act is, and the way we are, it's to get more clients and to make more money because we have to make a living. We love to do this, but at the end of the day, we need to pay the bills and buy our groceries and mm-hmm. fulfill the dream of moving out of our parents' house at some point. But
this is true.
It's huge. And so he pointed to Richard Simmons, and actually, we're going to pause for a second because my recording thing is messed up. Okay, so again, going back to what we were talking about before, Martin Rooney talking a little bit about kind of the perception that you give off, and talking about Richard Simmons, and you know how obviously he's uncertified, he's considered you know, the butt of many jokes, but he's, you know, over
He sold over 20 million copies of his videos.
Wow.
And he's authored 9 books, including multiple New York Times bestsellers, and he averaged 250 days a year on the road touring.
Wow.
Because, you know, then his secret is his enthusiasm, and, you know, people look up to Jack LaLanne because, you know, this dude's 400 years old, and he still looks amazing.
He knew the pharaohs.
Yeah. He actually helped build the pyramids.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. That was his exercise routine. Dude, he's amazing. I was just reading some article about him. He's like, seriously, what is he, like 99 or something? 98?
No, and no, he's not like, that old.
It's ridiculous how incredible he is. It actually is like awe-inspiring.
What else? He went on to go on talking about, you know, coaching, but, you know, also having the power of choice for you personally. Like, you know, they're, you know, you kind of look around the room, not everyone is in as good a shape as they probably could be. Mm-hmm. You know, you have some people that, you know, look great, and some people that you wouldn't be able to really tell that they're trainers.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, you know, do you have to look like, do you have to look like AC Slater to be able to train people? I don't think so. I think you can get it done quite well without having to be like that. But it definitely does help, and it helps, I don't know, motivate clients, or at least helps people gravitate towards you. But I think in the end, if you know your stuff, people are going to come to you either way, and if you get people results, they're going to come to you either way. But, you know, it is, you know, a good take home point.
Well, you know, it's funny because there's always been two sides to this kind of argument, where people say, you know, don't judge the knowledge of the trainer based on what they look like, and other people saying, but dude, you're a trainer. Yeah. And I honestly tend to side on the idea that you should be in pretty decent shape if you're a trainer. And it doesn't mean that you have to be AC Slater. Nice reference, by the way. But I do think that it's important to practice what you preach a little bit. And, you know, it's something that kind of conveys a message to the to your potential clients. And it sounds to me like that's what this presentation was about, the idea of saying, you know, it is all about the presentation. What differentiates you from other trainers can certainly be knowledge, but let's be serious here. Most of the time it's not. You're dealing with a client population that is hopefully not as knowledgeable as you are. So their ability to differentiate the good from the crap, or someone that knows what they're talking about versus someone who's an expert at what they're talking about, not really, you know, it's probably not there, and there's no real proof, to be honest, that you need that. You know, how much knowledge do you need before, you know, the difference between 90% effectiveness and 99% effectiveness? You know what I mean? Like, is it double the knowledge at 90 from 90%? Is it triple? What do you need? And then is it even necessary to do that? So, you know what I mean? Like, it goes a lot more than just saying, well, I've got all this education, or I've got all these degrees or whatever. And it's not to downplay that, because obviously, I mean, I think we all agree that education is first and foremost. But if you don't smooth the edges, in my opinion, don't have at least, you know, look, a passable physique, you know, you're lean, you're in shape, you're strong, whatever, then people aren't going to take you as seriously, and you may be losing out on clientele. And it's just a fact. It's the nature of what we are as people. It's something that should be emphasized, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the main aspect of it was, you know, being able to, you know, you gotta take care of yourself. And he has his Rooney's rules. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, and it's good stuff. Read 20 pages a day. Write 10 pages a month. like looking to five topics per year, eat six meals a day, five workouts a week, 8 hours of sleep, and six bottles of water, or, you know, the equivalent. It doesn't have to be bottled water, but,
right.
You know, I think I've seen multiple presentations today, and a lot of them have said 8 hours of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see other presentations that say, or the crush it mentality of, oh yeah, if you're gonna crush it, you know, 4 hours of sleep is fine if you're doing what you love, and you know you're gonna put the work in now, and then eventually it's gonna pay off and it's gonna be worth it. And like right now, I think like screw it, because there was like a 3 month or a 4 month period these last couple months, and John, I've talked to you about it a little bit, but my health kind of went to crap because of I was staying up till 2 a.m, getting up at 6:30, working all day, coming home, working more, going to bed late, getting up again early, and I don't think it's a healthy way to live for everyone. I think some people can do it, but I just don't think I'm one of those people that can do it and then you know, be where I need to be, you know, mentally and physically. It's just, mm-hmm. I mean, for my clients, like, you know, it's great that I'm trying to work at some stuff on the side, and that, you know, if people out there, you know, if you're listening to this, you know, you go to work and you have some kind of side project that's a passion project that you're working on that maybe could lead to you leaving your current job. You know, I loved coming home and working on the FitCast, and we've been tossed around doing some extra stuff with the FitCast, and you know, for a good 2 months, like I was going at it all, you know, a lot, and then it just you burned out, and I haven't gone back to that yet. I've just been trying to recover and get back to where I was, but I think that's so huge. And I mean, it's just like, all right, this is the, you know, the last blow that knocks over the wall and just says, fine, I'm going to go back to getting my 7.5-8 hours of sleep. I, you know, will read right before I go to bed. It will help me get to sleep and do all that stuff instead of doing my reading sporadically throughout the day. And but it's just like, yeah, that would be a nice case scenario. I don't know if I have it completely yet, but that would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I kind of rambled.
Something's got to give. Maybe. Yeah, you're rambling. Something's got to give, though. I mean, and that's basically it. And you're right. I mean, I think there are certainly people that can get away with 4 hours or 5 hours or 6 hours of sleep or whatever. I mean, there is genetic, you know, variables. But for the most part, it seems that it's around 8 hours of sleep, and there's certainly a ton of studies that support that kind of stuff. So I'd be lying if I said I was a sleep expert. So it's only just kind of casual glancing at that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think generally I'm sure that there are much more knowledgeable people that kind of talk about stuff like this and have techniques to just, you know, determine maybe what is your optimal sleep level. There's got to be something like that. I don't know if it's legit or not, but just throwing it out there so people are interested in finding out how much sleep they specifically need. It can probably be done. I know when I kind of don't have any limitations on my sleep, it's usually somewhere around 6 to 8 hours, give or take. So it tends to, I think also people tend to have that kind of internal clock where they wake up at the same time. So if you go to sleep one night, you still wake up at the same time, and that can really screw you up. So, you know, trying to be consistent with when you go to sleep and the quality of that sleep is probably your best bet.
And it's a running joke, but I can't keep drinking Spike so much.
No, you can't. You can't.
To the point where I had to pack it and check my luggage because it was that important to me. I think that's the point where it's like, all right, then maybe.
Time to give up the addiction.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I don't know how much people can apply what I just said at home, but I hope you can at least take something out of that and kind of think about it and think about, you know, where you want to be, and keep in mind that you have the power of choice. You can choose to do whatever the hell you want. If you want to be 5% body fat and look like a cover model, you can do that. if you choose to do it. And, you know, once you choose to do it, make the appropriate steps to get to where you need to be. But I don't know. I think it's good stuff as always. Next up was Alan Cosgrove, who I did his hands-on. Again, not a great idea after getting little to no sleep and then and also indulging in alcoholic beverages. But he decided that, you know what, it's a great idea. I know Kevin in the crowd. So he basically was on my ass the whole hour and 15 minutes. And for people who were in the class, I saw a couple of listeners in there. And he was literally, you know, said, "Oh, Kevin Larrabee, you train, you work for Mike Boyle, so this should all look pitch perfect, and you should be like the shining example of how all this stuff should look." And I, like, honestly, I felt like garbage. And I'm wearing my Nike Freeze that have no support whatsoever. And he actually pulls me into the front of the room while everyone's like on the side. He's like, "All right, Kevin Larrabee's going to show you how to do shuttles correctly, and then we're going to do shuttles." And I'm like, "Oh God." I'm so surprised I didn't snap both my ankles.
That would have been great. That would have been the end of it for you.
But it was still like, I was still lightheaded. Like I was still like falling over to the sides as I was doing the dynamic warm-ups.
You pay. You play, you pay. Look what you've done to yourself.
I know.
Now everyone at Perform Better is talking about you.
I know, but at least they know my name, right?
Yeah, good point. There's no such thing as bad press.
I should have worn a FitCast t-shirt, but I would have felt like such a tool if I did that.
Oh, you definitely should have worn a FitCast t-shirt. You should have worn...
Is it weird for me to like wonder why don't people know about the podcast if they go to these seminars? Like, I mean, not to like sound like snobby or anything like that, but I'm like... You guys are trying to get better, and here's something for free that you can listen to every week. Like, maybe that's just me being...
Well, are you pimping it, though? That's the thing. I mean...
Not at seminars.
Let's see, then you have no reason to suspect that they would know about it.
Well, not even know about it, but if, you know, I know some people that know about it, like, they like have come up to me, "Oh, yeah, you know, I heard about that, and I checked it out, but I don't listen to it." It wasn't even that. Like sometimes it was like, "Oh yeah, I listened to the one with, you know,
Alan or something." Yeah.
Yeah, like Alan Cosgrove.
John Barr. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I listened to that one.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is. We have an audience that likes what we do. We have a group of people that think we suck. It is what it is.
We have an awesome, awesome audience, by the way. Our audience kicks ass.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, should they know? Well, the answer is, how do they know? Do we give them reason to know? Do we advertise? Do we whatever? We built this on word of mouth, and you built it, I should say, on word of mouth. So, you know, if that word is getting to people at a seminar, which, you know, I agree with you. You kind of figure like, really, haven't heard about it because it's like everyone seems to know all the people that have done the show in the past as guests and this and that. So you would expect that there would be some kind of recognition of the FitCast, but if they don't, it's not really, it's interesting, but I wouldn't say it's entirely surprising because we have no, there's no advertising, there's no nothing. So why would they know?
No sign of Mike Robertson yet.
Oh no?
I haven't seen him. He's supposed to be here today and I have not seen him whatsoever.
You sent him a text?
I did send him a text, but I think he got a new phone.
Hmm.
Does that sound right? Or maybe he's just...
I think he's avoiding it.
That probably. I would.
I would. Nice.
So with Alan Cosgrove's thing, we basically went through what he does with his semi-private clients, which is, you know, dynamic warm-up. Dude, killer core... core activation stuff. Awesome stuff. Like,
oh, yeah?
Stuff that was like, yeah, you know, we do this, but we don't do it like in a group setting. It actually makes quite a bit of sense to put it in as like part of a warm up, but doing things like stuff that was pretty challenging, like one armed val slide rollouts where you're in a push up position and you push one arm all the way straight out and then you bring it back in and then alternate. pairing that with mountain climbers, and you just did as many sets as you could in like 3 minutes.
Okay, so here's the question. Is that an activation or is that a workout?
Well, I mean, it's part of the workout, but it's, okay, you know, core activation for people who are, the way he put it is like, you know, we focus on the core, but like a lot of people do it at the end of the workout. Why don't, you know, who thinks it's the most important thing? Raise your hand. And like everyone raised their hand because core is awesome and it is the bee's knees of fitness. So everyone raised their hand. And it's like, oh, well, that's why we put it, you know, at the beginning of our workout. And I'm like, if I had to pick the number one thing to work on with my clients, it probably wouldn't be core. But I think that's a big component. But no, I totally see where he's coming from. But anyways, that was one of the pairings. And then along with that, for the other two stations, you had a partner, and in one of them, you were doing a side bridge with like a, more or less it was a cable row, but we were just using bands, and you would just do 10 on each side, alternating, like flipping over, just keep doing as many sets as you can in a minute and a half, then switch over to the partner, and you did the same thing,
mm-hmm.
And also just straight plank on the floor. And basically doing the equivalent of a lat pull down, in the same position with the band. So the band was, if I was lying down, obviously the lat, pull down position would be, the band would be over my head. But think about it as if the floor was, so, I don't know, I'm really tired, but you can probably get what I'm talking about. That was incredibly difficult. And I've never done that before. I've done like the side planks with the rows, but I've never done, you know, I kind of like, was, it was like a lat pull down, like a one arm lat pull down in a front plank position.
It was pretty wicked.
Oh, it was brutal. It was brutal. So we did that and went through, some more circuits, you know, some more Valside stuff using TRXs, kettlebells, all that stuff. It was pretty cool. It was like, we were all sweating our asses off and finished with a 4 minute, 20 seconds on, 10 second off circuit. And then finally a leg circuit where we had to do 10 jump or 10 bodyweight squats and 9 lunges on each side, 9 jump lunges on each side. And then finishing with 18 jump squats. So more or less I was cooked at the end. Like it was lunchtime and I walked right upstairs. I'm like, screw lunch, I'm taking a shower, and if there's a possibility of food afterwards, I will be interested. And I just happened to bump into Mike and Mark Verstegen on the way down, so got to eat lunch with them, which was pretty awesome.
That's cool.
And who else did I see? And then I saw Brian Grasso, who talked about success and like goals and stuff like that.
Oh, did they establish the secret phrase?
Secret phrase for what?
Brian Grasso likes to establish the secret phrase of the seminar, and he'll try to stick it into his presentation. They used to do that. I don't know if they still do. It was a funny, you know, it'd be like, you know, just whatever. It'd be like, you know, not now, chief, I'm in the zone or something like that. You know, like it's stupid crap that he would try to throw into each presentation. It's actually quite funny, especially if you know what's coming.
No, he didn't do anything like that. And then I finished up with Chris Moore, who talked about exercise versus diet, which one will win or something like that. It was it was pretty good. I haven't seen Chris in 3.5 years, so it was good to see Chris and to talk to him again. He's doing good. He brought his daughter, who's going to be 1 year old tomorrow. So,
oh wow, congratulations!
Pretty cool. But you know, coming to these seminars, the best part is like oh my god, I met you. I get to get you on the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh crap. We haven't talked in a while. I get to get you on the podcast. And now, again, just trying to get home and figure out all these times and when to do it, because now with the summer session of Boyles, things have
hit the fan in terms of time, in terms of my free time, because we are there 5 days a week, morning to late at night. So, but that's the main gig, you know. Can't stop that, man. Coaching 10 kids is a blast. It is the best time you'll ever have. I don't know. I'm rambling again, John. Help me out.
I know, dude. I keep telling you, and you keep going back to the ramble.
I'm so tired. I would love to. I get to leave in like an hour for this thick ass meetup thing, but I would love to just sleep.
Nope, not gonna do it. You could grab like a 40-minute power nap, though.
I don't think I will. I'm not a good napper.
Dude, grab the 40-minute power nap. You have to.
All right, do you want to end this here and maybe we'll reconvene tomorrow?
Yeah, if I can. What time are you thinking there, homeboy? Aren't you going to be in stuff all day?
Yeah, but I mean tomorrow night. I'll probably go out tomorrow night, but I might have maybe like in half an hour or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, well, why don't we say goodbye for now and maybe I'll have some more stuff for people come Sunday.
Sure, and once again, you didn't even ask me what I did last week, and people that are on my Facebook know what
topic.
I did last
this
week.
This isn't off topic, John.
It doesn't matter. This was like a segment.
Do you want to record an off topic?
No, I don't. I'm telling Lee on you.
She's not here.
Well, when she is in a month, I'm going to tell her on you.
Good. All right, we're in the off-topic discussion. I'm still in Chicago. What's up, Lee and John?
I have no response. I don't know. Like, what up? Yeah.
I'm in a hotel, Lee P, on the 32nd floor.
Nice.
Wow.
You need a special key card to get up in this bitch. When it passes 8 p.m., you're going to need a special key to, you know, use the elevator to get up here. That's how.
You fumbled it, like it just can't. Okay, so here's what just happened to me. So I'm sitting in the library, as a good studious person does, and I'm already having a hard day with my mind and focusing. Okay, like today's one of those days where if someone was like, "What letter in the alphabet follows E?" I'd be like, surprisingly, the word that comes into my mind is F, sensor K. So that's coincidental. It's fitting. But anyway, so that's where my mind is today. And I was having like a really hard time because I was reading things that I already can't understand. And there's this guy who's sitting like right across to me, like kind of right diagonally. And he's sitting in this chair. And I don't know if have either of you seen Serial Mom?
No, that was a big deal back in 1994 when I was like 8 years old, though.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, so this guy's like sitting there and he has on these really short, like khaki shorts. Okay. And he just is for some reason squeezing back and forth, like Thighmaster style, his like legs as he's like sitting there. And it's making this really annoying, like squeaking sound. And it's absolutely like unavoidable to focus on. And so like, oh my God, like it's driving me crazy. And I can't help but like look up at him to see why he is making such racket, and with every outward squeeze he's obviously going commando because it's popping out.
Oh, God.
And I was just and I was just like, oh, I didn't need to see that. And you can't concentrate after that. There's absolutely nothing that you can do. And so that's I left to come here and to do this, but my mind's still reeling.
Dude, you didn't need to see that, but the benefit just can't be measured.
There was no benefit. There was no benefit. So that's where I'm at right now. That's where I'm at.
Look, whatever. It was a hot day, and it was a hot day. I elected not to wear underwear. So freaking shoot me.
Climate cool underwear now. You don't have an excuse.
Yeah. Dude, you're talking – everything Lee talks about is like, oh, my God, you have to do neat. You have to do neat. You have to do all this exercise when you're sitting around.
Yeah,
I'm listening to you.
I'm listening to you. I'm in the library studying, and now you're going to call me out on, like, international pod radio. It's pod a bunch radio. Of crap. Pod radio like that.
I apologize if the... maybe if I close that and I'm not downloading stuff.
Oh.
Wow.
Now the audio should be a little bit better.
Wow.
I'm downloading, like... I'm such an... never mind. I'm not even going to talk about it.
What are you doing, Kevin? What are you downloading?
Right now, no. Well, I have this thing called Dropbox.
Yeah, I like how you said no.
Begins with a P, ends with an N, and it's got an OR in the middle.
I like it's like, no. No, absolutely not. That's not what I'm doing.
P-corn? I don't know what P-corn is.
Yes, it is P-corn.
Popcorn.
Yeah, I'm getting some downloading some popcorn videos.
Orville Redenbachering that is what you're doing.
Dude, that guy is such a fraud.
How can you call Orville Redenbacher a fraud?
That guy's such a lying math. Sack of crap. I'm so tired, Lee. I'm gonna be such a disappointment to all these people I'm meeting tonight.
I know you have so much to live up to. Such expectations. I'd be nervous.
Yeah.
I'm sending out a newsletter right now to remind people that it's going on tonight. And while we record this, but hey, you guys, I do have some off-topic stuff that's pretty cool. I got a new iPhone.
Yay!
Got a new iPhone 4 up in this house, and I was everyone was looking at my iPhone last night at the dinner table. It was awesome. I was surprised. Everyone I was sitting with, every single person at the table had an iPhone.
That's crazy.
It was.
Yeah, but now they're making these like. Package of you know gigs that you can download before you gotta pay again. They're getting kind of shady, dude.
No, actually, I think I'm gonna sign up for the tethering thing. I'm not sure if I'm gonna do it yet, but I actually went back through my AT&T bill and I looked at how much data I used every month, and it was like 500 megabytes. And I've been paying $30 a month for unlimited, and it's $25 for 2 gigs. Which I'll, like, never go over.
Mm.
So it's actually going to probably save me money to just not do the unlimited stuff. But it's an awesome thing, and I forgot my charger for the phone, which I posted. Did you guys see the video I posted that I edited on my iPhone and uploaded from my iPhone to YouTube?
I did not.
I shot a video and edited it. It on the iMovie that you can get for the iPhone, then uploaded it right from iMovie to YouTube. While again, this is all while waiting for Mike. So I was burning some time and I was writing articles and listening to music, and I was like, I'll just play around with my phone for 5 minutes.
How is the quality?
It's good. It shoots in 720p, so it's pretty good. And you know, it's I still have my nice Kodak 720p camera or 1080p camera, but if I ever, you know, don't have that and I have this, it will be a pretty good replacement to shoot stuff. But I forgot my stupid iPod cable at home, so I can't plug it into my computer and take the video off it. It just happens that I was so lucky that every room has an iPod like radio dock thing as the alarm clock. That was so clutch. Otherwise I would have had to go to an iPhone or an Apple store on the iPhone launch day, and it would have been like, literally, if you've ever seen the opening of Saving Private Ryan when they're storming the beach, it looked like that.
That's horrible.
Wow. Just don't have any. I enjoy my my Droid. It's fine. I'm a Verizon customer, what can I say? But I've seen many people start having conniptions over their iPhone 4s, and that's great. Very happy. Yeah, it's becoming a Mac PC thing, I'm seeing, with the Droids and the iPhone.
But you're a Mac user, aren't you, Lee?
No. And it's not, I know PCs though. Like, I actually know how to use a computer. Like, not like in a smart assy kind of way, just in a way that, like, I can really use them. And I know how to, you know, I don't worry, like, viruses aren't an issue for me. I don't even have to use protection software. I know how to use my computer very, very well because I used to work on them. So, if I didn't, or if I was suggesting for a non-computer friendly person to use a computer, I would probably definitely say, you know, get a Mac. But for me, it's just not necessary. I need the programs that aren't available on the Mac. So that's really my only reason for being a non-Macian.
But that's weird. I use a Mac because I need the programs that are on a Mac.
Yeah, I need the programs that are not on the Mac. There's just more, I mean, there are more programs on PC than there is on Mac, and in the future it probably won't be like that, but for now there is, and all my programs that I'm used to and that I know how to use and that I work with, they're all PC. But, you know, it's cool. I realize that I'm already, like, you know, discounted from a group of elitist attitude people with you Mackers. John's an elitist Macker now. I know you are.
I am an elitist. Hell yeah, I'm an elitist Macker now.
Oh, it's bad when you see the, you know, there's some people that have the iPhone, the iPad, the laptop.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, I've seen it. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, I've at a bookstore, I saw the guy with the iPad, his iPhone, and his Mac all together.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I really should have bought Mac stock like 10 years ago.
I have a client that owned it like a year ago when it was a third less than what it is right now, and then he sold it to buy personal training sessions with me. So he holds that against me. He's out of personal training sessions, and he's like, oh, crap, they all, like, I don't have money right now, so I'll just sell my Apple stock.
Wow.
So, wow.
Dedication. That's dedication. No.
It's huge.
That should be put on your testimony.
Mm.
Yeah, he actually has a testimonial for me on my website. So
you should edit it and make sure that that is in there.
So I would good that I sold my Apple stock. To
yeah,
train
no.
With.
Yep.
Kevin Larrabee is worth more than Apple stock.
I like that.
It's impressive.
But yeah. I also recently I've watched Hot Tub Time Machine and Kick-Ass. I was sick on last Sunday after the wedding. So it's actually really good that we didn't do a podcast because I could barely talk. Those movies are pretty good. So
that was good.
Oh my God. I just sent out a newsletter and I had the same spelling mistake that I put in it yesterday too.
Oh God.
I'm such an idiot.
I forgive you. It's okay.
Oh, what the hell did you say before, Kevin, that when we were recording, you couldn't remember, like, it was a very common word, Lee, and he couldn't even remember it.
Something with an like, I-N.
I know. It was like, he couldn't imagine, unimagine. I don't know what he said. It was
I do not think it means what you think it means.
I do not think that this word means what you think it means.
Hey, Entourage starts Sunday. Sloan's back.
Yeah, it does.
Sup, Sloan?
God, I love Sloan.
Sup, Sloan?
What spelling error? Am I missing a spelling error?
It's not Kimmy Greens, it's Jimmy Greens.
No, it says Jimmy Greens.
Not in the subject line.
Oh, there you go. Kimmy Greens. Dumas.
So Jimmy
Greens. Okay, oh wait, so you're meeting up. Let me get some info. So you're meeting up with Fitcast peeps. Is it just you and them, or are there going to be any other pros there?
Potentially Mike Robertson.
Oh.
But I was talking to John earlier. I have yet to see him.
Isn't it his seminar you went out to? Or is it Perform Better? Are you out there? Okay.
His is in a couple weeks. Gotcha. Oh my God. Listen to this salad they have there. It's called the Jimmy. Tell me this is not right up my alley. Romaine lettuce with roasted turkey breast, smoked bacon, tomatoes, avocado, hard-boiled egg. Like, is that not like the ultimate meathead meal?
It is. But oh my God, you're recording the show and reading the menu.
Because I'm going there in like 30 minutes. I'm so tired.
I'm obviously hungry.
I'm not even, I've like barely eaten here. I've only had breakfast and lunch and a protein shake today, so. Kind of running on fumes here.
Well, then you go get that salad.
I'm going to pound that salad. It'll be my second salad of the day. All I've had is an omelet, a chicken Caesar salad with no dressing on it, and a protein shake that had one scoop of Ultra Peptide and one scoop of Ultra Peptide 2.0 in it. Mixed it up. Crazy. This off topic sucks, and I'm sorry, folks. It's my fault.
Does suck, and it is your fault.
I watched Back to the Future 3 the other day too.
I swear to God, if there's one more off topic where you mention that stupid ass movie again, I don't know what I'm gonna do, but it will be painful, brutal, and complete.
John, you know Craig Rabbit. Yeah, exactly. Where's ZZ Top when you need him? Oh my God! Oh my God! I don't know.
Oh my God! End it. Do we have any things to answer, or is this just it? Is the show gone? And then I'm gonna go and put together, you know, piece together furniture from IKEA.
Yeah, we're gonna stop recording right now.
And I was in Beirut last week, and Kevin never asked me anything.
Ooh, John, Facebook. John.
Yes.
How was your week?
It was fine. Lovely. I have pictures on Facebook and all.
Yeah, I saw the really scary ass rug. Thank you for that nightmare.
I know, it was sad.
Very sad. But no, was it fun?
It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
Hey, John.
And the best hummus in the world, by far. They're actually like listed as having the best hummus in the world. There was some kind of competition. Dude, they weren't lying. It was ridiculous.
Because I love me some. Was it flavored? Was it traditional? Like, what kind was it?
No. They don't mess with flavors. It's traditional.
No flavors. No, like, roasted pepper.
But you know what they do?
No, whatever.
They put, they had, you know, like, straight up chickpeas, like traditional. But then they have a different kind where they put in, like, they, especially, like, I'm noticing, like, any of those kind of, like, countries that I'm in, like, they use a lot of, like, salted meats. Like, there's a lot of, like, you know, like, lox, you know, like, salted salmon and stuff. So they – I don't know what kind of meat it was, but they put it into the hummus, and it was, like, a slightly different dish. It was absurd. It was with, like, pine nuts, salted meat, and hummus. And I was, like – it was appetizers, and I'm, like, I'm going to get full on this crap. It was ridiculous. So there you go. Yeah, awesome trip. And it's called – Beirut is called the Paris of the Middle East, and the downtown area of it is just like – I mean, it's like – you're like, really? I'm in the Middle East right now? Like, it's just – it's nuts. So it was really cool.
That was awesome. Yeah. I'm glad that you had a safe and enjoyable trip, John.
I'm on my own trip, all right? I got my own stuff to deal with.
Did I have a safe and enjoyable trip?
On my trips, I go to learn stuff and better myself and become a better coach, trainer.
He had the world's best hummus.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have some turkey salad bacon crap tonight.
I had dinner in the palace of a princess.
Can you talk about that?
Well, I had dinner in the palace of a princess. The pictures are online.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You said you looked at them, you lying bastard.
I looked at it. I didn't look at the descriptions for every single one of them, John.
So when you saw the palace, did you go, huh, I wonder whose house this is, and you just kept going?
No, yeah.
Lying bastard. I don't like pictures.
Real men take videos, John.
Real men take videos.
Oh, I had to show a comment that can't be aired for that.
Why not?
Then you've never had an opportunity to take a video.
I haven't. John, you don't know what you're talking about, bro. You're way out of your league, bro.
Bruh.
This is so worthless. Why are we even going to post this?
I don't know why. I don't ever know why. The only
I just do this because I wanted to talk to you guys. I haven't talked to you guys in a while.
I know. It's too long.
Way to heed the call, Lee Peel, by the way.
Lee, right? can we get you to Mike Robertson's like seminar?
On that. You might as well have like shot out a signal. I came running.
Lee, I know, that was awesome.
Come to the Midwest.
Come to Kevin Country.
Yeah, or you could come to Boston.
Right now?
I can't do this anymore, Lee. I can't do this anymore. We haven't met.
Actually, that's kind of
I've
funny.
Never
yeah,
met Lee Peel.
Neither have I. That's kind of funny. You know what? That's true though. This Android phone of yours is going to do wonders for our love affair.
Shut up, John.
Mm. It's true.
John, shut your mouth.
It's true.
I hate you, John. You're off the show. Guess what? You just got replaced with.
You didn't even have to say it.
Well, I wasn't going to say it. We all know where it was going.
That's why you didn't have to say it.
Horrible side joke. No sign this weekend either. I was surprised. Still no sign.
Really?
Bummer.
All right.
So next week it will be Lee Peel, myself, and Brian St. Pierre.
Oh, really? Sweet. Nice. Wait, so no John? Instead why no John?
No John.
Instead of John.
Why no John,
Actually, we do have to talk about that because I'm going on an extended trip for most of the summer. So we have to figure out recording times. And I don't know. So we'll have to figure that out.
No, I'm sad.
Yeah. So you may get your wish, Kevin. You may get your wish. And then I'm coming home because I have vacation time.
Nice.
So are you coming to the seminar at Robertson's?
No, I'm not going to Indy. Why? When's the seminar?
It's like in a couple of weeks, Kevin.
Yeah, July. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be gone. I'm not coming home till like the end of August or something.
Well, do you want to go to Long Beach with me? For a seminar?
Oh, so are you hitting all Perform Betters?
I think we decided yesterday that I might as well make the trifecta.
It's possible. Dude, I'll by the way, I'll talk to you off recording, but I'll be up in Boston. So did you get that?
We gotta hang out then.
Yeah, no doubt.
No, I didn't get anything that you sent out.
I wasn't sure if I sent anything. I think I like sent something real quick. I don't know if
And I'm not letting this rest. We just blew over it, but Lee, when we have to meet up soon, so we're gonna
Did Roger Lawson talk to you about my birthday?
No, we didn't talk to you about your birthday.
Okay, well, me and Roger Lawson made specific plans for you, me, and him to go skydiving on my birthday.
Bullshit, I ain't going skydiving. You guys are fucking crazy. You guys don't have fun with that shit. Yeah, I'm
gonna
be one of those,
You have to go.
Jump out of a plane.
Kevin.
Nuts.
Kevin.
You at least do the videoing. You know?
I will be on the
just
ground.
Just jump. I can see your vagina from here. I can see your hoo-ha.
Not worth it. I will go on a roller coaster. Something that is me strapped into something that is still harnessed to the ground.
Nice. Well, I really am coming up to that area to go skydiving. Yeah. To go skydiving with Roger Lawson. It's not a joke. We really are going to do it.
When?
So.
And my birthday. It's going to be in March.
Oh, so I have to wait like another 14
months?
Well,
I'm just saying I could, it could be sooner that I get around to that area, but I mean, that's like, it's like
you
a definite.
You say 14 months.
I did say 14 months.
Darn.
I almost threw up last night at 4 a.m. I woke up and crawled out of bed, and then I started falling asleep on the floor of the bathroom because it was cooler in the bathroom.
Okay, why?
Wow.
Did you have some drinking in Chicago?
I did have some drinking in Chicago.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's explainable then. I just thought it was just
because. When the beer is free and people keep ordering for you, you just keep drinking them.
Yes. That should be written somewhere so that people can enjoy the wisdom of that statement.
I don't know, yes.
Maybe on an Irish gravestone or something.
Yeah.
Be a little song.
All right, Lee, this is what's going to happen.
Okay, Kevin.
Either this is going to be by the end, I want by October. I will have met you, even if it means me flying down to wherever the hell you live and saying, let's go get an omelet. Split it, because this trip cost me money, so we're going to split an omelet.
So you fly down to meet me, and all I have to do is buy you an omelet?
Oh, if you want to buy it, then that's cool.
I can work with that.
Wow.
I'll Kevin's write it off as a business expense. Yeah. Dude, the
Kevin
jet,
is
all
a
the jet
pimp.
Needs is fuel, man.
It's like, yo, baby, I'm gonna come and see you, girl. I'm gonna come and see you when I get there. Yo, you're gonna buy me an omelet. What you know about that, baby? She's like, and she's all, damn, daddy, that's all I gotta do,
dude. Wow. No, and you better have that refrigerator full with freeze pops.
Yeah. Yeah, I want my spikes chilled, baby.
And I want snacks on snacks, baby. I better have snacks.
Because that's like me on chill. Kevin's a pimp.
That's a purple drink for me.
That was right out of the Players Club right there.
Yeah, it was.